There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
You don't have an expiration date.
Oh, I love that. This is the Authors and Agents Podcast.
Rhea, I am so excited to have you here with me today. I cannot wait to hear just everything about you and your journey. But first off, could you start by telling me about this book, The Other Year, that came out in August?
I sure can. So The Other Year is a little bit different than my previous books. It is about single mother Kate Baker, who takes her daughter on a vacation. They go on vacation every year. She has a nine-year-old daughter. And when they're on the beach the first day, her daughter's in the water. There's a red flag rippling in the wind, and her daughter disappears beneath a wave. So the book, actually, this is where it's a little different than my previous books. It's kind of splits into two parallel timelines and follows Kate on a journey for a year. So in 1 year, her daughter pops right back to the surface of the ocean. Life goes on as usual. She's navigating, you know, parenthood and romance and career. But in the other year, her daughter does not resurface to the ocean, and she must really grapple with losing her daughter. And I think the interesting thing about this book and going on these parallel journeys is I wanted to see if we always end up where we're supposed to, no matter what, or if a tragedy like losing your child, if that puts you on a different path entirely. So for me, it was really interesting to kind of play with time like that. I've never done that in a book, and see where this character ultimately ends up.
It's such a, you know, like a unique, you see dual timelines, right, in a lot of different books, but to have it be the same character split to, you know, like different things happening is very unique. It's so exciting.
It's very exciting. It was very hard, though, to write, I will say, just because my daughter was nine at the time, and I really used her as a lot of inspiration for this character, Olivia. And I mean, I was bawling as I was writing.
I bet.
Because I was just like, this is so hard to parent. But I think so many parents do lose their children, and grief is such a catalyst to change and transformation. And sometimes we skip over that in fiction specifically. So I thought it was important to kind of go through that journey, not around it, and see where it took me as a writer.
Yeah. I'm sure that you learned a lot about yourself through that. And I'm sure that it's able, you know, to see it on the page too.
Definitely.
Yeah. So now you've got another book coming out here soon too, right? Don't Forget Me, which comes out January 9th. Tell me about this one.
Yes, this one was so fun. I don't think I've ever had more fun writing a book. This is my first, what I like to call, true thriller. I've typically written domestic suspense in the past. And so this one is about a woman named Ruby, who moves to this really kind of elite neighborhood with her husband and teenage daughter. And shortly after moving there, her daughter goes missing and her husband leaves as well. And she, you know, assumes he's just left her because they have a very toxic relationship. And one day, Ruby, she decides to stay in the neighborhood, and she's rowing on their man-made lake, and a body pops to the surface of the lake. And an investigation ensues, and every single one of her neighbors thinks that this body is her missing husband, Tom, except Ruby claims she's never seen this man in her life. So the entire book, we're trying to figure out who's telling the truth, what body, like who is the body, what happened to her daughter. So it's a really, really fast-paced thriller, and trying to kind of figure out what is going on in this creepy neighborhood.
I love it. That sounds so exciting. I love books.
Oh my gosh. It was really, really, really fun to write. I was like, oh, I like writing about murder. This is fun. This is different.
Well, and I bet after writing The Other Year that it was like nice to not write something so grief ridden, like, okay, let's just write about a mystery.
And you know, this character, she does have a lot of trauma in her background, but it was a completely different type of book, but, yeah, so fun to write.
So these are not your first books. You have published and had published a lot of books. So tell me about your journey through publishing to this point, as best you can. And you know, like what's that look like for you?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's very important to start off by saying, you know, I didn't necessarily always want to be a writer. It was something that I did. I was always very into journaling and reading. My dad was a writer, not a published writer, but he loved words. Therefore, I really learned that I was pretty good at it and loved to write stories. But like so many people, I grew up thinking that writing was a hobby. It could not be a career choice. I could not really make money at it. I didn't have a model or a mirror as a child to show me that having a career as a published author was possible. So I actually wanted to be an Olympic gymnast. I wanted to be a veterinarian. I wanted to be like all these different things. But I did end up, ironically, going to Columbia for creative writing. I actually started off as a journalism major and switched and was so desperate to get published before I graduated college. I had an idea for this novel and ended up getting a traditional book deal when I was 22 years old. And I was over the moon. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm making my dreams come true. It was it wasn't a scam, but it was not a reputable publisher. The experience was not great. And it actually showed me that I was so desperate to be published that I skipped over all of the important stuff on what it even means to be published. I didn't understand anything about the business, nothing. And that was not taught to us in school. I took 4 years of writing and I walked away with this degree and not a single class I had was on the business of publishing, on how to read a contract, on how to negotiate, on how to get a deal, on how to pitch myself, advocate for myself. So I actually took it upon myself once I graduated to learn everything I could about the publishing industry. I worked at literary agencies. I became a ghostwriter. I was an editor. And I just got my hands very, very dirty. Yeah. But I was also really burned by my fiction experience. So I actually pivoted to nonfiction and got 4 books in the health and wellness space traditionally published. And so I could get a book deal. I could write a book. But the books, you know, some of them sold okay. But I realized I still didn't understand how to build a platform, how to sell books, which is so important, especially today. This was before social media and all of that. But I still wasn't satisfied. I was like, it's almost like I'm treating writing like a side hustle and it's actually really what I want to do. So long story short, I decided to give fiction another try. And this was around 2016. I had become a mother. And I had this idea for a story that just came to me in a lightning bolt moment, kind of like the other year did, actually. And I knew that if I did not write it right then and there, I was never going to write it. So I was working 3 jobs at the time. And I went home and I quit 2 of them. It's very irresponsible. I don't suggest. But I gave myself 8 weeks to write this book. I was like, this, if I don't do this right this second, somebody else is going to write it or my dreams are just going to kind of come and go. I wrote the book in a month. And by this point, I knew how to pitch. I knew how to get a deal. And I just really envisioned and I feel like manifested what I actually wanted this time. So I landed an agent very quickly. The book went to auction. It got a movie deal. I got a 2-book deal followed by another 2-book deal. And I decided that I was going to treat it like a business this time and look at my book as like, this is a product to sell. And I've got to figure out all of the other components like a business owner would to figure out how I want to do this and what I want it to feel like this time. So that sent me on a completely different path, book over book over book. And at the same time of this writing journey, I started a side hustle helping other writers. I wanted them to know what I knew and what I was learning and all the mistakes that I made. And I continued to make tons of mistakes, but it very organically scaled to a multiple 6-figure business without me, no marketing, no social media. I wasn't trying to get clients. They were just coming to me and finding me. And so I actually, in 2020, at the start of the pandemic, legitimized it and it became an actual business for me where I was helping other writers get published. And from there, it's really grown very organically. So my writing journey has been interesting in that, yes, I'm a published author and I continue to kind of learn and grow, but I also have a duty to help other authors get published and help them really understand all the pieces of the business, which I think is more important today than actually writing a good story. And a lot of people don't agree with me when I say that, but unfortunately, it's to be successful in this industry, it's so much about sales and marketing, and
oh yeah,
there's so much that's out of your control. So having some sort of grasp on that is important, I think.
And I think too, you know, it takes, I think it takes a while to get into that mindset of realizing, oh, that this love of like, okay, I wrote a book, I love it so much, and now I want it to be traditionally published. Okay, you've got to really change how you're thinking about it, because it is a business, and it's a business relationship with your literary agent and every step forward. And that can be a hard awakening if you're not prepared for that.
Completely. And, you know, most of the work that I do a lot of coaching calls. So if someone, 80% of all people want to write a book, and I'd say 100% of people don't really understand how it works. So yeah. I actually always take an introductory call, and I don't say yes to everyone, but we really start to go over, okay, what are your actual goals? Not your, you know, best friend's goals or Joe Schmo who wants to write a book, but what are your right. goals? And then once we dig into that, we can figure out which publication path is actually right for them, because most people do want to get traditionally published. But I'd say 50% of the time after I talk to someone, they actually change their mind to self-publishing once we talk about barriers to entry with traditional publishing, how long it takes with traditional publishing. And then we talk about the process to get there, whether you are indie publishing or traditionally publishing, and how no matter what, they're both businesses, and you're both, yeah. you have to care about your book more than anybody else. So I really, really, really try to bring a lot of transparency and clarity around that, and just understanding what you're getting yourself into, because I'm sure you agree, but like, this industry is so romanticized to people, like, oh, you wrote a book.
Oh, yes.
Like, that's so exciting. And yeah, it's exciting, but there is so much more that goes on behind the scenes. And a lot of authors really don't talk about the realities of it and the hardships of it. And I am wildly honest about all of it, because I think you would never take a job and then like not know really what you're going to be doing or how you get paid or how any of it works.
Right.
For some reason in publishing, like, we just don't ask questions, and we just don't want to like ruffle feathers, and we just want to be chosen. But it should be the other way around. It's your property as the author. You yes. are the one choosing how you want your work to go out into the world. So I think there's a lot of reframing to be done, honestly.
I agree with you. And I love that you have made this into another passion of yours, and that you are being honest and sharing with this, you know, all this information with people, because it is something very romanticized that either people have no idea what it's like, or they've seen TVs and movies where people are like, oh, I wrote a book and I just got this 6-figure deal randomly. They called me. Yeah. And it's like, that's not how it works.
Right. It can, but like, we only hear about the exceptions. We do not hear about the typical, you know, advances that people get and the typical stories. And how I would say most authors that I talk to, and I've talked to thousands of authors at this point, most people are pretty disappointed by their publishing experience. If they get a deal with the Big Five or they've been traditionally published, they're like, well, my team didn't really do that much, and I kind of was disappointed. And there is this common refrain with a lot of different elements of publishing that I hear over and over and over again. And I feel like it's kind of up to us as the authors to start speaking up and advocating for what we want and what's important to us.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate you doing what you do. And I know that the people who come to you and your clients, I'm sure, are very grateful as well.
It's so rewarding. I mean, yeah, to have someone come to me with like, I have a dream of getting published, and then they walk away with, because I'm kind of a matchmaker and match them to an agent, match them to a publisher, or if they want to self-publish, I navigate through that process. So to see them come to me with an idea and walk away with a published book is like, it's just the coolest. It's really, really rewarding.
Which is why you call yourself the book doula. Because I love that. I love that.
It's because I really am like we are birthing.
Yes.
But like, sometimes I am with someone the entire process, which is a very, very long process, no matter how you look at it. So yeah, we're kind of in a marriage of sorts.
Yes, you are. Well, thinking about those who are traditionally or wanting to be traditionally published and who are in the querying process, you know, what would your like top tip be for someone who wants to land an agent like in the traditional
sense? Yes, it's probably pitching is probably my favorite thing, mostly because everybody does it wrong. What I mean by that is most people, they're like, okay, I've written this book. I wrote a query letter, which is your pitch letter. And right. then they will blast it out to like 50 agents, 60 agents, 25 agents. And then they never hear anything. Like that's mm-hmm. typically when people are coming to me, they're like, oh, well, I sent it to like 100 agents and I didn't send back. I have a rule. It's called the rule of five. So what I do is I think less is more when it comes to pitching. I know it's so exciting to just like blast right. everybody, you know,
yeah.
but here's the thing about that. When I pitch someone or coach someone to pitch, and you really need to make sure that number one, you are researching the right agent for your book. So I'm sure people have heard this tip, but I always like to find five relevant titles that are similar to yours that have been published this year, not 10 years ago, not 15 years ago, not 5 years ago, this year, because that means they were actually acquired 2 years ago. So it's kind of hard to stay like ahead of the trends and see what's relevant, but you right. see, you know, who is representing these authors and really do your research and due diligence. So you're sending it to the right person. But if you send it out, let's say we send a query letter out to five agents, and no one requests either your book proposal if you were nonfiction or your partial or full manuscript if you were fiction, then that means that there is something wrong with your query letter. That doesn't, so if you were not getting requests for your material, then you have a fundamental problem with your pitch, which is why if that's the case, that's usually an easy fix. So we can fix your query letter. We can make sure, I love doing query letters. It's one of my favorite things. So if we send it out to five and three request a proposal or three request a manuscript, then we can check the first box, meaning we have a good pitch. We know this is a solid pitch. It has a good hook, et cetera. So if you do get three requests, let's say, I like to wait until, and I know it's such a long game. I mean, people need to know this.
It is
99% rejection and it is a long, long wait. But if three people get back to me, let's say it's I work primarily with nonfiction authors. So if it's a book proposal and they're all like, oh my gosh, this is an amazing proposal. We love it. But this person's author platform is just too small. And that's usually what I hear the most with in terms of rejections. Then we can take that information and I can help my author like, okay, you need to go really try to work on your platform in these ways, work on building your community. I mean, whether it's on social media or off, if it's fiction right. and all three agents say, this is really great, but like, I just didn't connect to the protagonist. And you're starting to get similar feedback, which I always say, take with a grain of salt. But once you start right. to see those through lines and the threads that are similar, then you can tweak and make adjustments before you've infiltrated the market, before you've sent it out to 50 agents and you've blown your chance because something is right. is wrong with your pitch. Or so it's actually a research phase, the pitching phase, in my opinion. It's really
like that
research. You're just kind of like feeling it out. And to me, like I do a lot of coaching when we get to that point of pitching because it seems like nothing's happening, but it actually is. We're really gathering the data and seeing like what's working and what isn't. So my biggest piece of advice is number one, make sure that you have the right pitch. Only send out to a few at a time so you can really test the waters. And again, make sure you're sending it out to the right people. You want to make sure that it's a match.
That's such great advice. And I like that mindset shift of like, it's a research phase.
Yes.
Because I think so much we think, okay, I've got my pitch. I'm going to send it out and then I'm done. And I'll just keep sending it out when people say no. But thinking about it like that is is very enlightening. I like that.
And one more thing I'll say about that too. So say you do get interest, you get a yes, or you get someone, an agent or an editor who wants to talk to you, which is so exciting. Typically, most authors, especially if you're a first-time author, you just want to be chosen. You want a yes. You're like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. Yeah. I'm just going to say yes. No, no, no. Do not just say yes. So I am all about energy. I'm super intuitive and really kind of like guide my life that way. But when you get on the phone with that person, again, you are actually choosing them. You yes. are the one in the driver's seat, not the other way around. They should almost be selling you on why they love your book, how they see positioning it, who they're going to pitch it to, not the other way around, where like, if you don't feel comfortable with that person, because your agent is one of the most intimate relationships that you have. Like, I know I could text my agent right now and she'd get back to me. It's also really important to know what questions to ask. So what's your communication style as an agent? Are you hands-on editorially, or is that going to be more on me? Are you someone who just gets the deal done, or are you going to offer other support? And most authors feel really uncomfortable asking questions, but right. you have to. It is your career, not, I mean, yes, it's their career too, but you are the one that is going to have to be in a relationship with this person. And you want to say yes to the right person, not just because like, oh, this is the only person that's interested, so I have to say yes. I've seen people do that and they really do regret it. So I say, you know, 99% of this industry is rejection, but all you need is one yes. So actually, when every time you get a no, that moves you closer to your yes. And I think it's a much better way to like reframe it and know that you just need one yes, which is exciting. Yes.
That is exciting. And I think that is so important. I think too, there's not enough conversations about the call, right? The call with the agent. Oh, gosh, there's yeah. not enough conversations about like, okay, this is the start of a business relationship. And like you were saying, they should be selling you on yes. them, because as you were saying too, it's your product, it's your book that yep. they want to sell. So yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of authors in that point are like, oh, I just need to let them tell me what they want to say, and then I just will say yes to them. But no, I mean, technically you want both people to have, you know, equal power, right? But you, yes. you are, I don't know. I want to say like, you're kind of the one, the more in power as the author in Definitely. That situation.
And get clear on what you want out of that relationship. So again, an agent yeah. really there, they're the ones that are going to facilitate the book deal. So they are going to go out, they have the relationships with the editors, the editor at the publishing house is who is buying your book. But that power dynamic is so, so important. I mean, they're essentially working for you for free until they sell your book. So if an agent right. is asking you for money, you better run for the hills.
Oh, yeah. Once Don't they give sell, them money.
not, no money. No money is exchanged. Once they sell your book, they get 15% of anything that you make. So they really are, I mean, they are there to get the deal done. But I cannot tell yeah. you how many people I know who've signed with like these huge agents, and then their agents either ghost them, they fall off the face of the planet, they can't get them to return an email to save their lives. So that's another, going back to like a piece of advice for pitching, is actually looking up, like if you really want to be with a bigger agency, that's fine, but look for the new agents within those agencies who are building their lists. They are hungrier, they are way more enthusiastic, they need to have sales, and they will work harder for you usually. So really think about that. Like, what is important to you? And for me, communication and enthusiasm are two of the most important things. I don't want someone who's just like been in this industry for 30 years and like isn't excited about me, doesn't want to grow me as an author. I want that like cheerleader for my work. That is important to me. So really think through all of those different things.
I think that is such great advice. There's so many good nuggets in there. So many good advice nuggets in there. So, talking about you as an author yourself, you know, what does it look like? So you were saying for your, when you went back to fiction and got, mm-hmm. you know, that lightning bolt of an idea and you wrote that book in a month. What does your writing process look like? Are you a big outliner? Do you just kind of write by the seat of your pants? What does that look like?
Yeah, it's shifted a little bit because when I wrote that book, so that book was called Not Her Daughter that ended up coming out in 2018. And I hadn't touched fiction in 10 years. So it was interesting. That book just poured out of me. It's the only book I've ever written that actually wrote me. I kind of don't even remember writing it. It was such an out-of-body experience. But I had an idea of where the book was going to start and where it was going to end. And then it just kind of flew out.
Okay.
But since then, I do typically get an idea. It's weird. I get an idea of where it's going to start and where it's going to end. I'm not a huge outliner. Like when I have 10, 15 page outlines, I know so many writer friends of mine
are
very organized. I feel very like boxed in that way. But what I will do, if I know I'm going from point A to point B, I know all the different things I have to hit. One of my favorite tricks is I call it like the post-it note exercise where I love to fast draft. So I try to get the draft out as quickly as possible and just kind of dump it out and give myself a deadline. And usually my deadlines are pretty fast anyway. I don't have a lot of time and I'm not a writer who can sit with a book for like 3 years. I want to get it out. But once I have a rough idea, I actually take a bunch of post-it notes and I sum up what happens in every chapter in a single sentence. And then I lay them visually because that way I can see, oh, this is just filler. Nothing happens in this chapter. There's nothing moving the plot forward. So that's a super fun way to kind of organize. And then I'll rearrange stuff or take things away. So I know where I'm going, but I give myself a lot of freedom and room to write. And I don't write every single day, but I am a writer. Like once I get into a story, I'm kind of obsessive and just want to keep working on it until it's done. But sometimes I do have client work. I homeschool my child. Like there's a million other things that come up and I've learned to just be really gentle with myself because I get these huge urges to write and create. And then I get time to just kind of rest and reflect and process. And both of those are very, very important to create a book, I think.
Oh, I think so too. You've definitely got to protect yourself, your mental health, your peace, and all of that to do any sort of writing. I love your post-it note method. I do a very similar thing, but with note cards in different colors. And I like to stick them on the walls. And my husband is like, what are you doing? I'm like, I have to see it. I have to see it like this. Or I can't make sense of it.
I love it. I'm so visual. Yeah. Sometimes like just everything on a page or in a Word doc or a Google doc, I don't know. It's like a weird separation thing for me. So I need to visibly see it in front of me. It really helps.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. For me, the Word doc, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to have to scroll through all these. I want to see it all in one little spot right here.
Really.
So obviously you have your agent, you have your editor who help you revise. What do you do before you hand things off to your agent or your editor to make sure that like your manuscript is in tip-top shape? Like what are your top things?
Yes. So I am crazy about having a very clean manuscript. So in my business, as a book doula, I work with a lot of copy editors and freelance editors, but I have one in particular, Jackie Hertz, who I've had since the beginning, and she's unbelievable. She's a copy editor, a proofreader, and I actually hire her out of my own pocket to read my drafts before I turn them into my development editor at my publisher or before my agent reads it. But I chose my agent because she was an editor for 5 years at a publishing house. And that was very important to me. I wanted someone with an editorial eye who could give me feedback before I turned a book in. So that's super, super important. I'm not huge on, I used to like belong to writing groups and have a ton of beta readers. And I found that too many cooks in the kitchen and too many opinions. I'm like, oh, I could take it here or take it here. So I actually learned to follow my own instincts and only have a couple of really trusted readers that help me get it to that point to turn in. And my agent's super honest. Like she'll tell me if something needs a lot of work or Jackie does as well. So they're kind of my two kind of to pre like readers before I turn it into my editor.
I love that. I think that's such a good note because I've been there too, where I'm like, oh, I want people to read it and I want to see what a bunch of people, different people say. But then I've had it where I get so much different feedback and you're like, what do I do with this now? So yeah, I have two. One's a fellow author who reads it, and then one who's just a reader. She loves to read and she loves reading. And it's like, those are the people I trust. And that's kind of what I go off of. And I think it takes you a while to get there, to get to that point where you can follow your own intuition about it.
Yes.
And just have a couple other voices kind of guiding you.
Completely. Because, and I don't know if you write with your readers in mind. I think I've been asked that question before, and it's a difficult one because you want to follow the story. But, once you become published and get your work out there, you do think about your readers, and especially if you're in a genre, like what they expect. But I have one. You are never going to satisfy your readers 100% of the time, and your book's not going to be universally loved or universally hated. But you do, I think the most important thing as an author is to hone your own instincts about story and about your story in particular and where it should go.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. That's a very good point. So I just have a few questions left for you. I'd love for you to share something with me that your readers might not know about you.
Oh God, there's like so much. I am very, this might be a boring answer, but yes, I'm creative, but I, since the pandemic really have been on this just very, very, very deep healing journey for my nervous system, for ancestral healing, all of these different things. So I kind of completely upended my life and changed the way that I do everything from the time I get up in the morning, working. We're pretty crazy. I mean, I've got these blue blockers on. I'm so crazy about blue light toxicity, noise pollution, light pollution.
Yeah.
We plug our Wi-Fi at night. We do circadian rhythm work, ground, breath work. So that has become such a huge part of my life. And I've actually, from doing this sun work, meaning instead of getting up and reaching for my phone in the morning, I go outside with the sunrise and get true sunlight into the back of my eyeballs, which in our culture, sun has kind of been vilified. We so misunderstand it. We got to cover up and wear sunscreen and all of that. Yeah. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. But because of this work that I've been doing, I've improved my eyesight by over like 2.5 points. Radically improved my eyes just from taking my contacts out or glasses off and getting exposure to my actual eyes. So I've gone down this rabbit hole of just so many different things, which is so fun. I'm just as passionate about that, especially raising a child who children today, like, oh my gosh, their circadian rhythms are so messed up from screens and EMF and blue light toxicity. So I've just become extremely passionate about doing that research and just returning to things that we've been doing for centuries. But like, it's just so easy to be inside behind our screens and consuming all of these things that are just really buffering and numbing us instead of us really connecting to nature, to ourselves, to light. That's a huge, huge part of my life.
No, I love that. I think I don't know, I feel the same way since having children, changed a lot of different things about my life. You have these tiny little people, you're like, oh my gosh, don't put that in your body. We need to protect you. And I think it just opens up, you're thinking in a bunch of different ways. So I could go to the sunscreen rabbit hole with you, but we'll save people.
I have to say, like, I've never been a sunscreen fan, and I like dermatologists are going to like, oh my God, I doubt you.
I know.
Listening to your show. This summer we were like, I am getting, because I've learned so much about the sun. And if you actually up your solar callus and expose your skin to the sun before 10 a.m., you are getting so many of these like good rays. And this entire summer, we live in Nashville, so it is hotter than the surface of the sun.
I bet.
Have not worn sunscreen. We went to the beach. We went to Florida for a week and were able to not wear sunscreen and not burn, because you do cover up with clothing or hats,
right,
or whatever when you get too much. It has been unbelievable what it has done for our health, and just getting sun. Like, sun is medicinal. No creature can live without it. And we've just been kind of sold this bill of goods with, I mean, and sunscreen, what you put on your body, your skin is absorbing that. And there's sunscreens on earth that don't have a slew of horrible chemicals.
Gross things in them.
Like, if you can't eat it, don't put it on your skin. That's kind of
exactly
my rule.
Exactly. Oh, I love it. Well, that is a very interesting note about you. And I love that. That's all good knowledge. So I just have a couple, two questions left for you. They're fun questions. How many bookshelves do you have in your house?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I'm one of those people, I've moved like 15 times in my life, and I've usually had my 40 boxes of books with me. So I do book purges a lot though, but I actually, we have this giant fireplace downstairs that doesn't work. And we actually affixed bookshelves. We had bookshelves made for them. So the whole downstairs is like a shrine.
I love it.
Books. And then I have my nightstands.
I
have like 50 books. Like, it's like a tower. And then, we have books kind of everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. I am the same here. I've got my own books that I read, and then my children's books end up everywhere also, right?
My first books are literally everywhere, all over this house.
Oh yeah. Yes. Well, my last question is just an easy one, I promise. I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. This is not favorite book of all time. Just something you've read recently that you like want to tell people about.
Yes. So I am in love with Annabelle Monaghan, who she wrote Nora Goes Off Script last year, and it's very like I don't even know what, like kind of light contemporary fiction, but her new book, Same Time Next Summer, just came out, and it is like just cozying up with a Nancy Myers film. If anybody knows who Nancy Myers is, she is such a fresh voice. Her plots are great. And I don't know, it's just such a kind of sophisticated, lovely read, but that you can just get through almost in a day. Like, absolutely. I just love her so much. I'm kind of her new biggest fangirl.
Well, I love it. That is awesome. I love books like that. This summer has been books like that for me, where I can just like read them in a day. They're happy. They're, you know, happy. They make me feel good. I'm loving books like that right now.
Me too. We all, like, life can get really heavy. So the escapism that way. I mean, I love thrillers too, but it's so fun to just feel good at the end of a book. Catherine Center is another author that I can always rely on to like, just have a lovely, just a lovely feeling like with her books. I know I'm going to be in for a happy, happy read.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I feel like I have learned so much from your knowledge, and I'm super excited for everyone who's listening to be able to gain that knowledge as well. And so you're saying primarily you work with nonfiction authors as a book doula, right?
Yeah, I mean, I will take on fiction depending on what they need. Like, I'll pitch a lot of people. We do developmental editing, copy editing, proofreading. But nonfiction people who are coming to me and need a book proposal, that's really kind of the bread and butter of my business. And then I do ghostwriting as well. So I kind of do it all, but I love coaching. Coaching's probably my favorite thing. Everything's under my umbrella at RiaFry.com, but people can just book one-off calls with me to just kind of talk about their goals and how I can help them. So that is open to absolutely everyone.
Awesome. Well, if you are listening and you need that, hop on there and chat it up. Well, awesome. I'm super excited for your next book coming out, Don't Forget Me, January 9th. Everyone make sure to pre-order it and get The Other Year, which came out in August.
Yes, please.
Both of those on your list. Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you.